Moses was born into a world that was rife with political tension. The Hebrews were multiplying rapidly across the land of Egypt, and the new king felt threatened by their size. So to stop the growth of their population, Pharaoh decreed that all Hebrew boys were to be thrown into the Nile. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll recounts this story and celebrates the role of Moses' mother and all those who protected him. It's part of Chuck's classic biographical study called Moses, a Man of Selfless Dedication. Chuck titled today's message, Born After Midnight.
Let's open our Bibles to Exodus chapter 2. As we begin the study of the life of Moses, we are going to cover only the first part of the first section of his life. His life, according to the book of Acts, chapter 7, is divided into three 40-year segments. His first 40 years he spent in Egypt, where he was nursed by his mother and taught by the Egyptian schools. His second 40 years he spent in the desert, where he was nursed by solitude and taught by God. The third 40 years of his life he spent with the Hebrew people in wilderness, nursed by trials, discouragements, and tests, taught by the law, which he personally received from God. Dwight L. Moody said this: he spent his first 40 years thinking he was somebody. He spent his second 40 years learning he was a nobody. He spent his third 40 years discovering what God can do with a nobody. Moses' life is relevant because you and I are in one of those three stages. We are either in the stage of thinking we are somebody, or the stage of learning we are a nobody, or the stage discovering what God can do with a nobody. The best of the three, of course, is the last. Take heart. Moses didn't learn it until he was 80. And for the last 40 years, he was effective for God. We get terribly impatient because we are not suddenly off the runway and in orbit, as it were, the first few years of our Christian experience. I do not find one biblical case of instant effectiveness. I cannot remember one effective person who suddenly, after coming to know the Lord, went into orbit and never came down until death. That is unrealistic. So if nothing else, we're going to learn the first few steps of a man who discovered late in life what it was to count for God. We have entitled the message, Born After Midnight, which suggests an untimely birth. And so it was. I am a student of Winston Churchill and often read his writings, and was moved just this past week to read his address to the House of Commons on the 17th of April, 1945, 5 days after his friend, the late President Roosevelt, died. He said this to the House of Commons: in Franklin Roosevelt, there died the greatest American friend the islands have ever known. He died in the harness, and we may well say in battle harness. What an enviable death was his. What Churchill meant was, in the height of success, having seen the demise of Hitler and all of his treacherous ways, Roosevelt died at an enviable time. He had seen the fulfillment of his goals. Moses was just the opposite. What an unenviable birth was his. He was born into a land that was governed and ruled by an anti-Semitic despot called a pharaoh. The conditions around the little hut in which Moses was born were nothing less than torturous. His people, the Hebrews, were the object of the whip. They were hated, they were misused, they were maligned, and they were murdered by Pharaoh, the Hitler of Moses' day. It was into this dark era he was born, far after midnight, the darkest day of Hebrew history up till that point. So as we read of his birth, we are not reading of something that was neat and light and delightful, though there are some delightful things in these first 10 verses of Exodus chapter 2. We're reading of a heavy, heartbreaking scene. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. To begin with, let's give attention to the family of Moses. Moses became a great man of faith because he had a mother and father who were people of faith. They were both Levites, and they were both apparently committed to the things of God. Not apparently, but for sure. We know that because of what we read in Hebrews chapter 11. And I want us to take the time to look over into the New Testament to a verse in the 11th of the book of Hebrews. You'll turn, please. Hebrews 11, verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. The king is Pharaoh. He is the ruler of the land of Egypt where Moses and his parents lived. We're told here that it was by faith he was protected for those 3 months. His mother and father feared the God of heaven more than they feared the king of the earth. And it was no easy task to hide that boy. But it was out of a deep reverence for God, an abiding confidence in the living Lord, that they did that. I just wanted you to see it verified in the New Testament. Now back to Exodus chapter 2. The chapter doesn't mention it, but Moses was not the firstborn. He was the thirdborn. He was the baby of the family. He had an older sister named Miriam, who was between the age of 7 and 12. It's really hard to pinpoint her age. And he had an older brother named Aaron, who was 3 years old at the time of his birth. Moses came as the baby in the family of three children. And we read in the second verse that he was hidden for 3 months because they saw he was a good child. The Hebrew word means good, beautiful, or well-formed. Some people take it to mean that they looked at the boy and they saw a beauty in him that was unique. Most parents, when they look at their little baby, see a beauty that is unique. Often that is the experience of new parents, and the baby isn't beautiful, to say the least. But the parents see the child to be beautiful. I take this to mean the opposite. He was, in fact, beautiful. And it is possible that they saw in his beauty something that was more than beauty. Maybe God revealed to them in the secrecy of their soul that this boy is destined to change the course of your whole life and the lives of your people. It might mean that he was well-formed and they didn't need a midwife to come and assist in the birth or the follow-up after birth, as we saw last week, the work of the midwife. Whatever it means, it was because of something in that birth, they determined it's worth it to do all we can to keep him, because at that time, according to the last verse of the previous chapter, they were murdering Hebrew boys. If the Egyptians had known of his birth, he would never have lived to see the sunset of the day of his birth. He would have been murdered. So they hid him. Now, if I may pause for a moment and look at this like a father, I want you that are fathers and mothers to think about the difficulty of hiding a child for his first 3 months. Those are not usually quiet days, are they? Those are usually tumultuous days. I think back to one of our children. Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, even though he's here, it was our firstborn. And he did not sleep through the night for 18 months. There were times I would love to have had a basket and a Nile River nearby. I know I will get it after the message tonight, and so I just thought I'd go ahead and say that now. And he and I'll talk about it later, but it would have been virtually impossible to conceal that boy for 3 months. You couldn't have concealed him for 3 hours, to say nothing for 3 months. Now, they had a job on their hands. Let's look at it very practically. Where can you put a squalling infant and keep him hidden? Well, apparently they did all that they could do to keep him concealed, but they couldn't do it any longer. It finally was to the point where they could no longer keep his identity a secret. Maybe the Egyptians went from house to house checking. Maybe they had a group of midwives who were doing their job and spotting those areas where there were mothers with children, and they checked to see what the birth was. And if it was a boy, it was reported. It could be that way, sort of a census. But whatever the reason, they weren't able to do it any longer than 3 months. And so the mother designed an ingenious plan, and I am impressed with Jochebed, the name of Moses' mother, Amram, his father. I am impressed that they were people not only of faith, but of very wise planning. Look at the third verse. When she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. With great care, Moses' mother mixed together an asphalt-like, tar-like substance from the banks of the Nile and several coats of mud so as to make this little wicker basket watertight. And she placed into that basket some soft pieces of cloth and perhaps some hay. And she fixed a little manger, as it were, a little bassinet. And then she covered it over so as to be sure the child would not drown. And then she set that basket among the reeds of the Nile. All my life, until just this past week or two, I have thought that Jochebed put Moses in the basket and then sort of pushed the basket out, and the current of the Nile carried it down, and it sort of rested there where the princess came out to bathe. But that's not what it says. Look at what it says. It says that she took this basket and then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank. Now, I've never seen the Nile River, but I have seen reeds growing in rivers. And if you know, as I know, what it looks like, they are rather sturdy plants. And she nestled this basket down and secured it in a very special place. She didn't float it out on the Nile and just say, well, God bless you, honey. She took that basket and she set it in a very special place. She put it right where she wanted it. She had a plan. That's what I'm getting at. She wasn't foolish in her faith. She had a great faith in God, a faith greater than it was in Pharaoh, and she knew that God was greater than Pharaoh, but she had a head on her shoulders. I am confident in my heart that she knew the habit of Pharaoh's daughter. And she knew that certain days, in a certain place, Pharaoh's daughter came to bathe. And she knew that at this particular juncture, just before Pharaoh's daughter came to bathe, if that basket were placed in just the right spot, they'd see it. And you'll never convince me that she didn't rehearse with Miriam exactly what to say and when to say it and how to say it. Make it look like a surprise, Miriam. Say it in such a way that it looks like it's spontaneous. And I'll be waiting. I'll be right there, ready to come. But we're getting ahead of the story. It says in verse 4, his sisters stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile. By the way, they have unearthed an obelisk and a couple of monuments upon which have been etched the scene very similar to this one. Some archaeologists believe that it was this scene exactly. At that particular juncture in the history of Egypt, for some unknown reason, two daughters of the Pharaoh reigned for a period of time as co-regents over a section of the Nile. And it just may be that Moses' mother knew that. And she planned that basket to be placed near one of the co-regents over that area because the Nile was the god to the Egyptians. And she knew that that daughter, who carried a lot of swat in the court, upon seeing that new baby, would take that baby and would raise that baby in some way. And so with this careful, ingenious, well-thought-through plan, she carried it out to the last detail. And down came Pharaoh's daughter, the princess, to bathe. It says she saw the basket among the reeds. Look at that. It didn't float down there. It was placed there. She saw the basket, and it says she sent her maid, and she brought it to her. Now, we would miss a great deal of this if we did not imagine Moses' mother right this point. There's not a mother in the congregation who has any trouble imagining the feelings of that mother. Can't you see her standing on her tiptoes, watching with bated breath? Especially when she heard her baby cry. Can't you feel with Jochebed what she must have felt? Now, she had no proof but what that daughter would take that baby and plunge it right into the water and drown it right there. She had no assurance. And so she trusted in God to give that mother, to give that woman a sense of a mother heart. They have discovered through some archaeological digs that some of the most ancient religious rituals of the Egyptians included a statement of trust that many Egyptians took before the god of the Nile. It said this, I quote, I have afflicted no man. I have not made any man weep. I have not withheld milk from the mouth of sucklings. They found that written in archaeological finds. And it may be that that daughter of Pharaoh had taken that oath. So when she found that baby to keep her trust before that river god, taking it as from its womb, as it were, she held that baby to herself. And Jochebed at that moment motioned, to Miriam. to make her move. And she did. The daughter got that baby. I should say the daughter of Pharaoh took the baby. She opened it. She saw that the child, it was a boy. It was crying. And she had pity on him. She said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." She knew either by its dress or just the circumstance. She saw when it was a boy, obviously it was a Hebrew child. Some mother not wanting to see the death of her son would rather risk its life among the Egyptians. And so she realized that she has a Hebrew baby on her hands. And she wonders what to do. Josephus adds an interesting thought. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's interesting. It says that she took the baby to several of her maidens to see if one of them could nurse the child, and there was no success. And at that point, Miriam came and brought the suggestion of the mother. Now, that makes a nice, neat story, but it doesn't say that in this text. All we know is that Miriam came and asked about her brother's future. Look at how she did it. It says, the sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" And she didn't tell her that it was his mother. Certainly not. She had rehearsed it. She had a very careful plan. And she says, "I may be able to find just the right one." And Pharaoh's daughter said, "Go ahead." And the girl went and called the child's mother. Now, can you picture the mother right now? A mother never ran faster than Jochebed ran from her hut to that very place where her baby was. But she had to be very, very careful in this whole process. And it says the girl went, called the daughter's child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I shall give you your wages." Oh, wow, that's terrific, isn't it? Not only get to raise your own child, but you get paid for it. It's a terrific plan. That's the reward of God. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Proverbs 16:7. Never doubt that. When your ways really please the Lord, he'll take care of those enemies one by one. And Pharaoh's daughter said, "Look, I'll pay you if you'll take this little one and take care of it." And so the plan was enacted. I want to stop here and make some application. To say that you are a person of faith is not to say that you are not a person who plans. There is a strange sense in our day that planning and faith don't go hand in hand. Those that are unemployed say, "I'm just waiting on the Lord to provide a job." And if they come to me for counsel, I say to them, "But where have you put in your resume?" "Oh, I'm just waiting on God." "Oh, really? You don't mind going hungry for a while then," would be my response. It's like the old revolutionary soldiers, "Trust in God, but keep your powder dry." You see, to walk by faith does not mean you don't think. To spend money foolishly and then to think by faith somehow the till will be replenished, that's not faith. To do something that is stupid and lacks wisdom in planning and then to tag it faith is not faith at all. It's presumption. Now, on the other hand, to make a statement and to trust God and to do all within your own strength that's wise to pull it off, that goes hand in hand with wisdom.
Chuck Swindoll is helping us draw wisdom from Moses' remarkable story. You're listening to Insight for Living and the second message in a classic 20-part biography called Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication. Let me give you a quick preview of the messages coming up in this Hallmark study, which Chuck delivered several decades ago. In the coming days, he'll present a practical sermon called God's Will, My Way. And then he'll present another helpful message called Lessons Learned from Failure. and another one called Burning Bushes and Second Chances. These are all coming up on Insight for Living. Of course, if you prefer to listen ahead, you can find all 20 sermons for Moses preloaded into our convenient mobile app. And you can also purchase all 20 studies on CD. Just ask for the series titled Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication, when you call us at 800-772-8888. And then we're pleased to offer you a new booklet from Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll. It's called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness. Families, churches, marriages, they're all prone to fractured relationships. In this booklet, Chuck describes the biblical path for asking and offering forgiveness. And Cynthia tells a highly transparent personal story when forgiveness healed a broken relationship in her family. Again, the booklet is called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness. And you're invited to request a copy when your request includes a donation to support the ministry of Insight for Living. Here's the address to write to us. It's Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas, 75034. A reminder that when you give to Insight for Living, you're making it possible for countless others to benefit from the Bible teaching that you've come to rely on. We'd love to hear from you. Again, our address is Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas, 75034. Or you can call and speak with one of our friendly ministry reps at 800-772-8888. And our website is insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his series called Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Born After Midnight, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.